You know, the House Finance Committee recently voted to preserve funding for the state's only work release program for female inmates at the YWCA Fernhurst. Well, the planned closure of the program was initially explained as a cost-cutting measure by the State Department of Public Safety. Critics of the move were quick to point out that the individual cost of enrolling inmates in the program amounts to less than what it would take to incarcerate them in the first place. A petition to halt the closure quickly gained over 150,000 signatures, and advocates of the criminal justice reform here in Hawaii are reviewing the reversal as part of a larger reexamination of the criminal justice system across the country. Monica Espitia is one such advocate and the head of the ACLU Hawaii Smart Justice Campaign. She spoke with the Conversation's Harrison Patino about justice and reform here in Hawaii.
I think that it had been coming for a while, is my understanding. And the response to it, you know, as an advocate, I was very pleased that so many people jumped to the defense of the program. It just goes to show that when we're pushing for one thing, to do more community work, to not have people isolated in incarceration, to have that happen, it's tone deaf and it's not really solution-based. It's not evidence-based.
Do you think the reaction would have been what it was had we not been in this current uproar of cries for reform for our justice system?
I would like to think so, because the program has been around for so long and I think a lot of people knew about it, but I don't really know. I think that everything that's been happening in the past couple months has definitely awakened a lot of people, has opened up a lot of people's eyes.
One of the key aspects of the story that critics of the decision really zeroed in on was that the cost of the enrollment of these inmates into these work release programs actually cost less to incarcerate them in the first place. Yet the planned closure was initially explained as a cost-cutting measure. It seems a little bit weird that our institutions that are responsible for criminal reform sort of have this shaky ground on which they're justifying these positions to shut down criminal reform programs.
It's actually very worrisome. In 2017, Hawaii spent $255 million of its general fund on corrections. That's $255 million to house about 5,500 people. And if you think about it, the way that they're housing them and the things that they're not offering incarceration, people, the recidivism rates are super high, between 50 and 60%. Fernhurst has a success rate of 85%. So when you look at it in long term, it makes zero sense. It really makes no sense, because you're putting people in a system that they're going to come out, chances are that they're going to reoffend again, as opposed to a program that has such a high success rate. It boggles the mind.
There was pretty swift backlash when the closure was initially announced. Do you think we're seeing a really serious groundswell of a more favorable public opinion with regards to criminal justice reform programs, not just here in Hawaii, but across the nation?
I believe so. I think that people really are opening their eyes. I think that people are tired of these tough-on-crime policies that are not working. I just mentioned the recidivism rate. I think people are starting to understand that you can't, you know, cut funding for schools and for housing and for mental health and invest those in incarceration, and that's going to work. People are seeing that we're locking up people who don't need to be there. We're seeing that we are criminalizing poverty, that we're not addressing the root cause of these issues. I think that, you know, as an advocate who's been doing this for a while, it's refreshing and it gives me a lot of hope. But I think people are starting to see, and I think some of it has to do with the policing, with the smartphones, and I think seeing the actual numbers, $255 million to incarcerate people, and they're not coming out better. We're not helping our communities.
Well, you see, you talk about those root causes that create this criminal behavior. I mean, what are those root causes?
You look at things like poverty, mental health, support, addiction, school. We know that different schools are funded differently. A lot of the root causes of criminal behavior are things like isolation, shame, exposure to violence. And then if we don't address those things in the community, and we should be doing that, right? Like, a lot of times people can't even get help, or people can't even get clean until they're too far gone. And so if we had those kinds of services available, if those services were funded, a lot of people almost look at incarceration as a way to help their family members. And that's a really sad state of affairs, right? When you're hoping that your loved one goes away so maybe they can get some help. And we know that once they go away, they don't get help. Right? They're housed in these super inhumane conditions. These are all things that come into play.
Now, you're the head of the ACLU's Smart Justice Program. In your own words, how exactly would you describe the concept of smart justice?
The Smart Justice Campaign is a part of a national initiative to decarcerate the nation and Hawaii by 50% while combating the racial disparities in the system. So that means that we recognize far too many people in the U.S., namely Black, Brown, Indigenous people, and in Hawaii this means Kanaka Maoli and Pacifica peoples are disproportionately policed, arrested, and incarcerated. And our campaign seeks to empower people who have been directly impacted. Smart justice is providing evidence-based solutions to societal ills. Smart justice is not incarcerating more and more people. Smart justice is not criminalizing poverty. Smart justice are not these tough-on-crime solutions from the 80s that are really not solutions. Smart justice is people-based, is really seeing, like, what the community needs and addressing those needs.
So from what you've seen, how has Hawaii taken to implementing smart justice in the current day? Is it working?
It's not doing great. You know, it's really sad because I feel like we've had a lot of reports come out. We had the OHA report back in, was it 2010, 2011? We had the HCR 85 report that came out last year that was how to do criminal justice better. The legislature has asked for these reports. They've been produced. It has provided recommendations, and then we don't follow the recommendations. In terms of, you know, we've had to file so many suits going back to the 80s, and we're still over-incarcerating. Our jails and prisons are still overpopulated. Those things cause harm to the people incarcerated, to the families, to the communities. And so I still think that when you hear prosecutors talk about tough on crime, that it's not helpful. We need diversion. We need community-based solutions. And I think that we have the roadmap. We just need the will of the people and of the powers that be.
To what extent do you see the addressing of serious criminal reform, maybe even smart justice, as a factor in this upcoming prosecutor's race?
For us, it's a big public education push. The prosecutor race is one of the things that people can actually vote to change. Sometimes when we're asking for reform and we're asking that money be allocated from incarceration to, say, a program like Fernhurst, sometimes people feel like they can't really be a part of that process, even though we've seen, obviously, that they can be. But with the prosecutor race, that's a vote. Like, you elect the person who is going to take that job. And so what we're hoping is to educate the public on what the prosecutors do. We're hoping that people will look at the different candidates and say, like, this is a person that represents my values, that represents the way that I think things should run.
Now, going back to the YWCA Fernhurst program, it got a save at the last moment with funding from the Finance Committee in the House. But do you think that in the future, these sort of work release programs are going to be possibly even have a threat of taking their funding away again?
I think so, until the powers that be change their minds. But like I think that you just brought up, there does seem to be a swell. People seem to be opening their eyes and maybe just paying a little more attention of where the money's going, over the things that we can do. Like, we know strong families and vibrant neighborhoods are the foundation of safe communities. I think people are starting to understand that we need to reduce mass incarceration and reinvest those savings into alternatives. And so I do think that they will still be under attack. Look how hard we had to fight for a program that we knew was successful. While the fight was good, and it's sad that we have to fight for these things, we should all agree that programs such as Fernhurst should just be protected, and they should look to see how we can expand those programs, how we should reduce incarceration. We hope that whoever is elected as prosecutor, that's something that they can speak to, right? Like, I'm an advocate, so of course I'm going to talk about certain things, about alternatives to incarceration, about a smarter way of doing things. But if a prosecutor says it, or any public official, quite frankly, I think people will listen. They have the power to change it.
That was Monica Espitia of the ACLU Smart Justice Campaign speaking with The Conversation's Harrison Patino. We should add that the half a dozen clients of the program have since been returned to the YWCA.